Mayai tat pratitam yartam. Chikitseva kathayusi. Prasadya jagadatmanam. Tapasadus prasadanam. Bhavachidam ayacheham. Bhavam bhagya bivarjitaha. It is very difficult to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in my case, although I have satisfied the super soul of the whole universe, I have prayed only for useless things. My activities were exactly like treatment given to a person who is already dead. Just see how unfortunate I am, for in spite of meeting the Supreme Lord, who can cut one's link with birth and death, I have prayed for the same conditions again. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sometimes it so happens that a devotee engaged in the loving service of the Lord desires some material benefit in exchange for his service. This is not the proper way to discharge devotional service. Out of ignorance, of course, sometimes a devotee does so. But Dhruva Maharaj regrets his personal behavior in this connection. Dhruva Maharaj is exhibiting in these verses the humble and pure heart of a great Vaishnava. He attained the ultimate perfection of the direct darshan of the Supreme Lord. He was cleansed of all of his material attachments, misconceptions, given promotion to Vaikuntha, also given the most incredible type of devotional service, to rule the earth for 36,000 years, perfect health, youthfulness. But instead of being overjoyed by all the benedictions he's received, he's feeling ashamed, because in his pure state, he's thinking how he inconvenienced his spiritual master and how he inconvenienced Krishna. Material consciousness means janasya moho yamaham mameti, that I am this body. Those things in relation to the body are mine. Material consciousness is that of selfishness, where we consider our own interests to be most important. In the conditioned state, within the material world, every jivatma is thinking in this way, save and except the great Paramhamsa Vaishnavas. From the insignificant insect, even the bacterias, they may not have much of an elevated state of consciousness, but they're simply somehow or other surviving automatically just to sustain itself. They may not be intellectually discriminating what I want and what I don't want. They just automatically just exist in such a way to sustain one's own existence, to find some happiness through that process. The insects, the reptiles, the fish, even the vegetation, what to speak of the animals and human civilization. Everyone is obsessed with this contamination that I am the center of the universe. My sustenance, my happiness is the most important thing in life. And we are happy when we find fulfillment in these things, and we are unhappy when we do not. Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagrati samyame yasyam jagarati bhutani sanisha pashyatomane. Gita describes that for a devotee and a non-devotee, their perception of reality is opposite. What is day for a devotee is night for a conditioned soul. And what is night for a devotee is day for a conditioned soul. Because materialistic people are always thinking in terms of I and mine. And a devotee is always thinking in terms of what will satisfy Krishna. From ourself being the center, we put Krishna in the center. The fact that everyone is thinking myself the center is the root cause of all the disunity, hatred, envy, wars that is taking place. Essentially, the reason this world is dukalayam ashashvatam, the reason it's so miserable, is because of this false ego, which is a plague, it's an epidemic that is widespread everywhere. So Dhruva Maharaj, he has just received spiritual and material benedictions that are unparalleled. But because in his purified state of consciousness, he's thinking, yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. If I please Guru, I please Krishna. He's thinking that I didn't really satisfy my Guru or Krishna. Narada Muni told me when I first came to the forest that you should not take so seriously the insults that your stepmother has inflicted upon you. It's all temporary. Just go home. But because his motive was actually so angry, so defiant, so full of a desire for revenge against his brother and his stepmother, that he frankly admitted to Narada Muni, I cannot listen to your instructions. They may be good for a Brahmin, but I'm a Kshatriya. I cannot tolerate this injustice that has been inflicted upon me. So Narada Muni, actually he was testing Dhruva. He gave him mantra, and he gave him the path of perfection, and Dhruva Maharaj with such determination followed it and attained perfection. But still, Dhruva Maharaj is seeing the bad in himself. He's not saying, Narada actually just tested me, but now I've attained the perfection of life, so everything's all right. That's actually the way we have to see it. If we think the same way about Dhruva, the way he's thinking of himself, then we will go to hell for aparad of a Vaishnava. Such a mystery is being revealed here in Bhagavatam. How a Vaishnava thinks in a purified state. He's just seeing the defects in himself. He's not seeing his greatness. He could be speaking to the Lord so many wonderful things about himself. We speak wonderful things about ourselves, but what are we compared to Dhruva Maharaj? Have we attained rulership over the entire earth 36,000 years without aging one day? Are we that materially blessed? Have we attained in the future rulership over Vaikuntha planet, Dhruva Loka? Have we seen the Lord face to face? Empowered by him, blessed by him, speaking to him directly, we would be very happy to tell everybody about our glories. But Dhruva Maharaj is not speaking these things. He's only speaking, what a rascal, fool, selfish person I am, that my Guru Maharaj so mercifully gave me an instruction and I could not follow it. He's seeing the defect in himself. And he's presenting himself with such humility. This is actual humility. He's not just pretending. He's blaming himself that he did not really satisfy his spiritual master. He didn't really surrender. So this is the way all of our great acharyas have prayed. If we read the poems of Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, if we read the prayers of Vishwanath Chakravarti Baladev, if we read the prayers of Rupan Sanatan, Raghunath Das, Krishnadas Kaviraj, we will find consistently that they never praise themselves. They're always eager to praise other Vaishnavas, and even in their most advanced state of self-realization, they're always looking for some fault in themselves and praying, Krishna, give me shelter. I'm desperate. I'm helpless. I need you. Impersonalists, they declare themselves to be God. And materialistic people, without necessarily calling themselves God, they want the praise and the glory of God in whatever small way they can get it. But a devotee is not interested in any of these things. You see, if Dhruva Maharaj was not perfectly satisfied in finding the ultimate pleasure in praising Krishna, he would not be able to speak the way he is about himself in a pure self-realized platform of consciousness. As a devotee understands Krishna, a devotee sees his own insignificance in comparison, and therefore can never praise himself. Who am I to Krishna? When we stand before the Almighty Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has all opulences in full, when we're conscious of Him, Krishna conscious, then why would we praise ourselves? So for those of us who actually want real self-realization, we have to take this attitude of Dhruva Maharaj very seriously. Although a pure soul, one time in his life he wanted that material benefit, and he just keeps reminding himself of that. Dhruva Maharaj is spoken of in Srimad Bhagavatam because of this quality. Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam braja. He's actually surrendered to Krishna. He has surrendered his ego to Krishna. In essence, that is what the bottom line of surrender is. We may give wealth, we may give our intelligence, we may give our physical energies, but to give our ego to Krishna, to renounce it, that is real surrender. That is trinadapi sunichena, tarorapi sahishmana, amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. When we truly make the offering of our false ego to Krishna, Krishna, I am yours. The conditioned soul wants a high position, but a devotee wants a low position. In order to please the Lord and serve the Lord, we may be put in a high position, but it's never what we want. If you want it, you're in a fallen state. If you simply want to serve, simply want to please Krishna, simply happy to think about your own shortcomings and beg Krishna for mercy with that consciousness, then you are a Vaishnava in the true sense. Yesterday I heard a tape of Srila Prabhupada where somebody asked Srila Prabhupada that if Krishna knows past, present and future, then he knows exactly what everyone's going to do for all time to come. That means he knows if you're going to surrender to him, or he knows if you're going to continue to enjoy material sinful life. So if Krishna knows everything in the future, what is the question of free will? If we are predestined and Krishna knows our destiny, then how can we have free will? It's a common question asked. He answered it in the most practical way. You see, there's jnanis and there's bhaktas. Jnanis, they want questions to be answered in a very theoretical form, just for their intellectual satisfaction. But bhaktas, they want realization. And realization comes through a practical understanding. It's like devotees ask Srila Prabhupada sometimes, did we fall from the spiritual world of Brahmajyoti? Did we fall from the spiritual world of Goloka? Where did we fall from? Prabhupada said, you cannot understand. Sometimes he said different things. But essentially he said, if you're drowning in the ocean and someone throws you a life raft, does it really matter whether you fell from this place or that place? What really matters is you can go back home, to your eternal home, if you just take shelter. That's what you have to understand now. To theoretically have some conviction that I fell from here, I fell from here, I fell from here, or why I fell from there. You know, you might be able to brag to people that I know so much, but how is it going to help you practically? Prabhupada said it doesn't really make any difference. The real thing is to understand that you are part of Krishna, you are the eternal servant of Krishna. Love of Krishna is within your heart. You have forgotten your relationship with Krishna, and the life raft is being thrown to you in the form of devotional service. Take shelter and get out of the ocean of material existence. Then you'll understand everything. It's practical. Prabhupada used the example of the crow and the tal fruit, that the tal fruit falls on the ground and somebody saying it fell because of the wind, and someone else says, no, it fell because it was ripe, and another person says, no, it fell because a crow landed on the branch and shook it and made it fall. Whether you understand exactly how the tal fruit fell is not important. What's really important is it's fallen. Do something with it. That is Prabhupada. Practical. He put devotional service and philosophy in a practical understanding by which we can make advancement by applying it to our life. Jnana vijnana triptatma. There's knowledge, but without practical application of knowledge, there's no realization. And knowledge without realization is not really beneficial. We may impress some people by our knowledge, but it doesn't really help us spiritually unless we realize that knowledge. So Prabhupada was very practical because he was merciful. So yesterday I heard this question. They asked Srila Prabhupada, if Krishna knows everything in the future and he knows exactly what you're going to do, then what's the question of his giving us free will? Would you like to know Prabhupada's very, very practical answer to this question? He said that Krishna knows that you are going to continue engaging in sinful materialistic activities forever. He knows that. Therefore, yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata. Therefore, he descends into this world through the spiritual master, through the Vaishnavas. He even comes himself again and again and again because he knows in this material existence, your false ego, you're just going to go on with sinful life forever. So he comes to the material world to change our destiny. He comes to save us. He comes to give us a chance. And it is our free will whether we're willing to take this opportunity or not. That is an understanding of Krishna's mercy. It's practical, because factually, if Krishna didn't come and reveal the scriptures, if Krishna didn't come and perform his pastimes, if he didn't speak Bhagavad Gita, if he didn't come as Vyasadeva to write the Shastras, if he didn't come as Ram and Krishna to display the pastimes of the spiritual world, if he didn't send Jesus Christ to the West to teach us that there's another world beyond this world of death, then who would have ever known anything? All the conditioned souls, by their destiny, would just go on and trying to enjoy, and inevitably become implicated in sinful activities and never be able to get out. So that's actually our destiny, according to Prabhupada's answer in this case. Our destiny is just to rot in this material world forever. But Krishna is so merciful. He comes to interfere, to intervene. So many ways, and tell us, please come, get out. And then sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. And if we just surrender our free will to his instruction and direction, then we're free of all sins and we're liberated from our material destiny. That's why Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the greatest astrologer on the planet, he gave up astrology forever. Never did another astrological thing again. He wrote textbooks. He was famous. The greatest astrologers in India honored him as a real scholar, real practitioner. But he gave it up. Because he understood all this destiny, Krishna comes to intervene with our destiny. That's the whole concept of bhakti. If we just use our free will to accept Krishna's mercy that he's coming to give us, then we can be free. Free from the repetition of birth and death. Free from all the sufferings and pains that we have predestined by our previous activities. Srila Prabhupada explains that one actually is suffering as a devotee. A devotee naturally thinks this is due to my past karma, because he's humble. He doesn't blame anyone else. He thinks, this is what I have done to myself. Krishna is so kind, he's minimizing it. And the fact is, when we do make a step, a sincere step to take shelter of the Lord and his devotee, then Krishna does take charge of our lives. But still, he may let the apparent effects of our previous karmas still come upon us. Because that's what we deserve. Now the question is, now that it's coming, Krishna's letting it come according to his will, but in that situation, what are we doing? Are we taking shelter of him? Are we maintaining our faith in him? If we are, then we're really devotees, then we're actually surrendering. Actually, by Krishna letting past karma still come upon us, he's giving us a chance to really surrender. Surrender means not to find fault in others, to take responsibility ourselves for what's happening, and in that situation, helplessly cry out for his mercy. Here, Dhruva Maharaj is showing us so nicely. Even in a purified state, he's taking responsibility for the mistakes he has made in the past. And he's feeling very humble in that situation. So this is how real spiritual advancement is made. Mahatmanastumam paratha daivim prakritim ashita. A devotee is under the protection of the divine energy, the spiritual energy of the Lord. And the three modes of material nature, Krishna says, is very difficult to overcome. And in this verse also, divine energy, yoga maya. So what is the difference between yoga maya and mahamaya? The materialists are under the powers of mahamaya, and the devotees who are sincerely surrendering are under the powers of yoga maya. But in this world, sometimes they appear the same. It's the same energy. But Krishna is applying them for different purposes. So therefore, a devotee sees that whatever karma is coming, it is actually the mercy of Krishna. Although it's also, it's the mercy of Krishna that I can surrender to him in this situation. But what's happening is a result of my own past activities. And in Krishna allowing my past activities to come upon me, it's his mercy because he's giving me the perfect opportunity for me to surrender to him under these circumstances. In this way, everything is very much perfectly under the control of Krishna for a Vaishnava. For a non-devotee, it's just the automatic, mechanical process of action and reaction. But for a devotee, that same principle may be apparent, but actually Krishna is ultimately controlling it, monitoring it. And by doing so, give us a chance to actually become purified. We have been striving for useless things since time immemorial. And by the grace of Gurudev and by the grace of Gauranga, we have been given the path by which we can become truly blissful in a purified state. And as we're making spiritual advancement, it will help us more to think in terms of our mistakes than think in terms of our glorious achievements. Because the mistakes you made, you're responsible for. And the glorious achievements you have attained, Krishna's responsible for and Guru's responsible for. This is the way a devotee thinks. If he does something wonderful and somebody says, "So nice you have done," a devotee says, "I didn't do it. I can't do this. What was I doing before Guru and Vaishnavas took control of my life?" This is all the mercy of Guru and Krishna. I have not done anything. So a devotee doesn't take credit. Why should he take credit for something that belongs to someone else? The fact is, Guru did save us. We're acting under his instruction, and we're being empowered by Krishna, and we're doing something wonderful. Why should we take credit? It doesn't belong to us. If we take credit for something that someone else has done, that's like being a thief. You're stealing. You have to pay the consequences of a thief. Someone says, "Oh, such a nice lecture you gave." Actually, whatever nice things I can say, it's only because I'm repeating the words of my spiritual master. It's only because Krishna is giving me the ability and the intelligence to say these things. Therefore, what am I? I'm just like an instrument. Give credit to Guru, whose words they are. Give credit to Krishna, who is the origin of all wonderful things. That's truth. That's honesty. But whatever mistakes we made, it's our fault. Can't put the credit on anyone else. Krishna's given us everything and we misbehave, we misuse our independence, we strive for things that he doesn't want us to strive for, and it's our fault. We can't blame anyone. Such a wonderful philosophy. You're to blame for everything you've done wrong and you don't get credit for anything you do right. Huh? Now, materialistic people would probably go insane and go to psychiatrists if they started thinking like this. Inferiority complex. People will tell us how nice we are and how good we are. Give us antidepressants. But actually, this is the truth. The difference between materialists becoming depressed under this circumstance and a devotee is a materialist because he's the center of everything. If he doesn't take credit for the good things and only takes the blame for the bad things, and all he has in his life is his false ego to try to satisfy, then it's a completely hopeless, dark, and gloomy condition. But a devotee has Krishna to take shelter of. We find billions and trillions of times more pleasure giving the credit to our good actions to Krishna than taking it ourselves. And we find a deep, deep yearning in our heart to take shelter of Krishna with all humility when we take personal responsibility for the mistakes, the flaws, and the shortcomings of our life. So Dhruva Maharaj, how seriously he surrendered to the instructions of Narada Muni. Narada said, "Chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya." He gave up sleeping, he gave up eating, he was constantly chanting that Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya mantra 24 hours a day. He took that order of his life and soul. Narada Muni said, "Remember Krishna, here is the form." He focused his entire mind without deviation on that form of Krishna within his heart. Narada Muni told him, "Give up sense gratification." He gave up eating, he gave up sleeping, he gave up breathing. To Dhruva Maharaj, even breathing was sense gratification. Very subtle state of spiritual awareness. How many times do you condemn yourself for sense gratification when you breathe? That's how subtle he was aware of selfless yoga, devotion. So he really took the order of his Guru Maharaj as his life and soul. Vyavashayatmaka buddhir ekeha kuru nandana bahushaka hinantasya buddhayo vyavashayana. Guru Maharaj was really a personification of this principle. That those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, their aim is one. And because he had that resolute determination, he attained the perfection of self-realization in less than 6 months. But here he is, standing before the Lord, revealing the honest condition of his consciousness. And he's not thinking, "I didn't eat, I didn't sleep, I didn't drink, I didn't breathe. I was always remembering Krishna, I was constantly chanting his holy names. This is what my guru said, and I did it." He's just going way, way back to think that my guru gave me an instruction, but I didn't follow it. Vaishnava tries to see the good in other and sees the mistakes in himself, but not in a depressant state. We do it because we want to be humble. We don't see the faults in ourselves because we want to be depressed. We see the faults in ourselves because we really want to be humble. We really want to take shelter of Krishna. What's the need of taking shelter of Krishna if you're all right? If you're feeling good, there's no need to go to a doctor. When you're conscious that there's something wrong, and it's serious, then you take shelter. This is what humility is about. We're conscious that there's deficiency in ourselves, and it's serious, and it's urgent, and we take shelter. We take shelter of Guru, we take shelter of Vaishnava, we take shelter of the holy name. Draupadi, she didn't chant, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda," the way she did when she was living comfortably with her husbands. But when there was an emergency, when she felt deficient, she felt that she was really in a difficult situation, then she cried out with great feeling. She actually realized she was helpless and hopeless. She was humble. She was humbled by the circumstances. And a devotee is praying and striving to constantly be in such a humble condition of consciousness. And how to do that? That whatever good we do, give credit to Krishna. And whatever pain, suffering, or reactions are coming upon it, take full responsibility yourself. Be humble. And actually take shelter. Amani na manadena. We could speak all big lofty leelas, but are we amani na manadena? It's all theoretical unless we have this quality. Are we offering all respect to others and expecting none in return? That is how you can understand who is a realized soul. Academic knowledge, any person with a fertile brain can memorize and speak. Sometimes we see, actually, we have had programs where big politicians come. I remember in Kurukshetra, there was a cornerstone laying near the Jyotisar, and a big politician came. And he was speaking. And I can tell you, the audience, about every 30 seconds, they were just clapping and cheering because he was just an incredible speaker. He just had control over the audience. And he was such academically, intellectually, and charismatically, he could just control that crowd. The devotees were speaking and people were falling asleep, I can tell you. They were speaking pure Siddhanta. And this man was speaking, and every 30 seconds, hundreds of people clapping. Later on, I asked, you know, what did he say? What did he say? And they told me what he said. And it was a great disappointment. Even myself, I was clapping because I thought he must be saying something good. But he was speaking Hindi. I didn't know what he was saying. So you can move people's hearts with academic knowledge, memorization, charismatic approach to presenting things. But that is not the sign of a realized soul. Amani namanadena. This is a sign. This is what Dhruva Maharaj. He's offering all respects to others, expecting no respect for oneself. He's giving all glory to others, and he's taking personal responsibility, even for defects that don't even exist in him anymore. These are the qualities that please Krishna. These are the qualities we should strive for. Prabhupada said this is Vaikuntha atmosphere, where everyone is thinking everyone else is better than me. That is Vaikuntha. And material world is when everyone is thinking I am better. Or if I'm not better, I want to be better. You see, in Vaikuntha, you're thinking everyone else is better than me. It's not that you want to be better than them. It's that you want to serve them. They're better than me, let me serve them. Let them always be better than me. Let them eternally be better than me. And let me serve them in ecstasy. But in material world, if someone is better than you, We may call someone Prabhu. We're Das, Das, Anu Das. Now we're Das, 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 Anu Das. But as we make advancement, we become Das, Das, Anu Das. Then as we make more advancement, we become Das, Anu Das. Then after we make more advancement, we become Das. Then after we make more advancement, we become Prabhu. And after more advancement, we start competing with Mahaprabhu. It's not like that. Vaikuntha mentality is, everyone is better than me, everyone is Prabhu, and I am eternally Das, 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 Anu Das. Rather than me competing and trying to challenge and become equal to or better than the other Prabhus, I just want to serve them. And if everyone is thinking like that, then Krishna's in the center. Otherwise, we talk all rhetoric, Krishna's in the center, but is he in the center? Are we positioning ourselves and canvassing in various ways? Sometimes we even canvass for someone else in such a way that we're in the center. Therefore, real service attitude is preliminary to any real understanding of the spiritual world. And what is the real service attitude? Das, Das, Anu Das. Give all glory to others and take responsibility for our own mistakes. And even if we haven't made any mistakes in 50 years, think about that mistake you made 51 years ago and humble yourself and take shelter. That's what Dhruva Maharaj is doing. Incredible consciousness, uncomprehendable by materialistic mind. One can only appreciate this wonderful verse today, if one is blessed by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation: it is very difficult to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in my case, although I have satisfied the super soul of the whole universe, I have prayed only for useless things. My activities were exactly like treatment given to a person who is already dead. Just see how unfortunate I am, for in spite of meeting the Supreme Lord who can cut one's link with birth and death, I have prayed for the same conditions again. Prabhupada gives a simple example. Lady is carrying, or somebody is carrying, big, big load on his right shoulder. And the Lord comes and says, you know, I will give you any benediction you like. And the person says, my right shoulder is hurting too much. Please put it on my left shoulder. That is what it is, asking for material benedictions. So we should understand what we should really be praying for, what we should really be striving for. Is there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
You said that if a devotee, you know, he expresses humility, materialistic people may think that he has an inferiority complex and they may send him to psychiatrist. So, in the group of devotees, there are various types of devotees. One is very expert in performing devotional activities like doing Nirjala Ekadashi, doing nice preaching and so many things like that. But there may be some devotees who may be falling short of that. So they may develop some inferiority complex in the assembly of devotees and they may always feel lowly and like that. So is it favorable and how can we overcome this inferiority complex?
We don't have to compare ourselves to others. We should see that others, whatever good they are doing, we should honor them, we should respect them, we should glorify them. And for ourselves, we should just be honest and try our very best. You only become depressed when you have false ego. When you see someone is doing better than you and you just can't do it, you become depressed. That's false ego. But if you're thinking, this is my Prabhu and I am Das, he's doing so wonderful, I do the best I can, and if it isn't as good, I'm very happy to see him doing so nicely, and I become inspired, and he helps me to try to do better. Transcendental competition doesn't create envy. Material competition definitely creates envy. Transcendental competition means we compare ourselves to others only insofar as we want to be inspired by others to improve our own devotional service to our capacity. So if we see someone doing much better than us and we see that we really just can't do it, we should be inspired by his example to just do the best I can. And thank that person and serve that person for helping me, by inspiring me. That is Vaishnava mentality. Not that we're depressed, we're grateful, but we try our best. At the same time, we should be humble. If we can do something very wonderful, we think, it's by the mercy of Krishna, it's not me. And if we can't do something very wonderful, then we should just be humble and understand and keep trying. Keep trying to purify ourselves. A devotee doesn't want to be great. A devotee wants to serve those who are great. Materialists want to be great. Mayavadis want to be great. Devotees want to serve the great. Krishna is the supreme great. We want to be the servant of his servants. Does that answer your question? Yes, Prabhu.
He's asking that you said in your talk that we have to offer the results to Krishna and we should be in that humble state of mind. So he's saying, could it not be another feature of Maya, that humility, that we are giving something to Krishna?
Maya will attack us on all platforms, gross and subtle. But we can judge its thing by its result. If by offering something to Krishna, if we become excessively proud, think ourselves better than others, and offend others, then we really haven't offered much at all to Krishna, because we haven't really made the offering in his service. That means we've made the offering more or less in our own service. If you're proud of the results and you become egoistic and offensive to others because of what you have done, that means, have you really done it for Krishna? To some extent, yes. But a majority of your consciousness was really doing it for yourself. So we should understand the distinction between real service. And we may not be on that platform. That's what we should want. That's what we should desire. That's what we should pray for. And that's what our intelligence should continuously monitor and check our mind to be striving for. It was explained already that real surrender is surrendering that false ego. But somehow or other, because a person is engaged in devotional service, eventually the ego will be purified by that. Just the fact that they're in connection to Krishna. Even if we really, really want to be glorified for the results of our devotional service to Krishna, it's still connecting our consciousness to Krishna. And eventually we'll become purified even through that process. But the purification may be very hard. Krishna is going to respond by somehow or other smashing that ego to pieces. And it may be very painful. And we have seen devotees who do tremendous amounts of service and become tremendously empowered and then become falsely proud and then offend others. You don't offend others unless you think you're better than them. Only you're envious of them. Otherwise, you don't make offenses. If you're humble, you don't make aparads. So those people made serious aparads, and then Krishna because they were doing devotional service, he has to purify you. So he smashes them, takes everything away, cripples their consciousness. And then everybody that was glorifying them is hating them and condemning them. It's part of the process for some people. If that's what you want to go through, then that's what Krishna may put you through. But if you just use your good intelligence and really try to be humble and take shelter, then if you start doing nice things and you start becoming very empowered, you just offer all respect to others, expect none in return, and give credit to Krishna. And think like Bhaktivinoda, "Dear Lord, I'm a demon, but you have delivered so many demons, that is my hope." That is Thakur Bhaktivinoda. Millions of people are following him. He was the empowered one to discover Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace after hundreds of years of being lost. Such a scholar, the greatest scholars of Calcutta and Bengal and India were coming to learn from him. The most renounced Babaji's were coming to hear Bhagavatam from him. He's writing books in English, in Bengali, in Sanskrit. Such beautiful songs, prolific. How he was being empowered at every moment. He has a son that's a pure Paramhamsa Vaishnava. But yet he's praying like this, from the core of his heart, "I am an asura, I'm a demon. Oh Gopinath, I'm such a demon. I'm full of lust, I'm full of pride. But the fact that you have delivered so many demons, that is my hope, that I may also be delivered." Hare Krishna. If you think like that, you'll simply go back to Godhead. But if you become proud of the accomplishments that Krishna has done through you, you're still making spiritual advancement. But part of that advancement is Krishna may have to shatter that pride to pieces at a certain point. And it may take a few more births for you to come to that conclusion. So as we're getting purified, we should conduct our life and conduct our way of thinking according to the words of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Then we will always be protected. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.